'Tis the season to be jolly, tra la 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 la. 'Tis the season to be jolly, tra la 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 la. Oh, stuff this. Ladies and gentlemen, it's me, James Whale. Ah, very good evening, good afternoon, good night, good morning, and whatever time of day it is. Hello, welcome, of course, to the James Whale Radio Show, the only program you can hear anywhere at any time of day. And listen, if you get fed up with this show, there's over 60 hours on jameswhaleradio.co.uk with some amazing guests. Sometimes with no guests, but just go and look through the archive of the programmes on our own radio channel, jameswhaleradio.co.uk. Good day. Nice to have you with us. Robbo produces the programme. He's here.
Yes, I am. I'm over here today.
Very good, too. Now, I have to say, Robbo, I've had an extremely busy week, and I am knackered at this moment in time. I went out yesterday, well, a few hours ago, really, went out to a launch of the new Ford Focus. Now, I have to tell you, as we're sponsored by Ford at the moment, they have launched a new Focus. It comes out next year. And I tell you that BMW and Audi are going to have to watch out because the build quality of that car is fantastic.
Is it like the new Mondeo that's coming out, posh and swanky inside?
It is, but it's cheaper.
Wow.
Because it's smaller. But the only thing is, I went to the launch of this car and they had a super duper sports Focus, really in canary yellow. And I said, oh, that's nice, dropping the hint, thinking they'll say, oh, James, why don't you take it for a drive? And all that, we went and had a look at it. I said, oh, this is really nice. Yeah, careful. Don't touch it. I don't want you to get your fingers all over the paintwork. I thought, that's not very nice, is it?
Had it not dried?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure. I hope it had. I'm apparently going to be in the shops next year. Very nice. Very, very nice indeed. I'm driving the Ford Cougar at the moment.
Yeah.
It's got too much stuff on it. I've told them I can't cope. Every time I want to do something, the car does it for you. Now, I don't know what I've turned something on, and every now and then the car says, you're getting sleepy. Why don't you have a coffee? Well, I'm not getting sleepy. How on earth would the car know that I might be getting sleepy?
Maybe your eyes are shut.
Well, no, they're not shut. And I don't flipping well want the car to tell me that I'm getting sleepy. It's a bit spooky.
Does it make the coffee for you?
Well, I'm wondering if there's a button in the Ford Cougar that actually will make the coffee. I don't know. Maybe there is. But the interesting thing is, suddenly it says, are you feeling hungry? This is this new sync thing that Fords have developed, and it's all married in with the sat-nav. And suddenly it'll say, are you feeling hungry? Well, let us recommend a restaurant that's only a X amount of miles or whatever from where you are now.
And what sort of places does it recommend?
Well, I presume whoever's bought into the memory banks, I don't know. But so if you just say to the machine now, say, look, I'm feeling a bit peckish. And it'll say, what sort of food would you like? Well, I'm looking for you're having a conversation with your car. It's getting more like Star Trek every day.
Wow.
But it's getting to the point, where I just wanted a phone to make a phone call. Now, I'm doing this radio show through my iPhone with microphone and headphones plugged in. I mean, could you imagine doing this anywhere else?
Maybe you could do it in the car.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking about that. Next year, the Transit van is 50 years old next August, I think.
Right.
Well, I thought, well, that'd be great. We do the show from a Transit van.
A mobile radio show.
Well, and then I thought, what about if we can get Ford to give us a chunk of money? We could do Whaley's World.
Right.
from the van.
We'll travel around the world in the van.
Yeah. Anyway, listen, let's get on with the show. Very, very good day to you, wherever you are. Of course, we'd like to say hi to our listeners all over the world. And apologies, last week's programme with James Cosmo talking about the pyramid texts, which that's the script on it I have here. And we've still got the trailer on our website, haven't we?
We have, yes.
You know, if you want to get a little flavour of it, if you haven't heard the show, go and listen to last week's show again with Cosmo. Because I think it's pretty good. And it crashed our server. How many times?
4 times.
Flipping heck. You know, if you're a bit of a boxing fan, I think you'll like it. It's an amazing movie, and as soon as I know where you can see it, we will let you know. A lot of people want to see it. They're being cagey about where they're going to release it, but they will be releasing it. And I think there's another showing on the 18th of January to the those people from the world of cinemas deciding on where they may release it. But it's an amazing film, and James Cosmo, I thought. Was just brilliant in this. So anyway, if you want to hear the interview again, then it's available, is it not?
It's available, yeah. Either one of the radio stations will probably repeat it, or failing that, just go to the website.
Yeah, jameswhaleradio.co.
Yep, that's it.
.uk. You were talking over me again, weren't you?
Well, there was a pause, so I thought you wanted me to...
Have we got any music on the programme this week?
We've got a Christmassy one.
Oh, good. Oh, actually, talking about Christmas, let's do this flipping nativity place. I see just because I'm trying to get Bar Humbug trending, everybody seems to think, oh, you're right, old Scrooge. I just get fed up with Christmas, don't you?
Not really, but yeah.
Ding dong, merrily on high. How's the rest of that go?
Better.
Does it? Oh, okay. We didn't talk about the nativity thing last week, did we?
No, I've got to go tonight. To see my daughters.
Oh, in Essex, there was a great nativity which has been all staged by Henry vacuum cleaners.
Ooh.
You know the little Henry vacuum cleaners with the faces?
There's a pink one and a red one.
Yeah, they're all playing the characters of the nativity.
So they're being pulled about by the hoses.
Yeah. And of course, I always used to think that the nativity was part of history. That's where I went wrong in life. But anyway, we put this question out, I think, last week on Facebook, because it was last week, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was last week.
No, actually, I think it was a week before. And I asked the question, are parents right to complain when their child doesn't have a significant part in their school's nativity? Also, your thoughts on parents campaigning to replace the traditional nativity for ones, well, some containing... Henry's, some containing Elvis and Star Wars characters as well. What's not to like about that? And some of your thoughts. Well, Tony Nichols said, why can't we have a nativity called Wash and You Won't Stink? I don't actually understand that. Do you, Rob?
Maybe he thinks kids stink.
Well, you know, they... I don't know. Mine don't. Do yours?
Not normally, no.
No. Does your child have a significant role in the nativity?
No. She's going to dance around with an umbrella for about 30 seconds, and then that's like the three-hour play.
Listen, I got to wear my dressing gown, slippers, and a tea towel on my head, and that was it.
Yeah, I did that. I was a shepherd.
Yeah, you know, that just means... I don't know what it means, really. But I remember one year saying, I don't want to do it. And they all go, oh, yeah, everybody has to be in the nativity. I don't want to be in it. And my parents are a bit, they don't want to go and see it. I don't want to be in it. What do I want to be in this for? And I get really upset. Jeff Hobbs says, I think the parents that get you upset tend to be the pushy ones who want to live their dreams through their kids. I think you're right. They're the same sort of parents that stand on the touchline of a school football match and hurl abuse at the referee. Those are the sort of parents. Mm. Mark Gibbs wants to keep it traditional. Well, okay. Dell says, this is getting out of hand, James. It's our Christmas, not holiday. It's our Christmas, not holiday. We need to stand up and be counted. Too much of this. We mustn't upset anyone, non-Christians. This is our country. Well, I don't know what you're talking about, Del. I mean, I don't follow any religion. As far as I'm concerned, you know, if you want to follow a religion, if you believe that, that's entirely up to you. It's a free country. I've never found anybody upset over Christmas. You know, to me, it's not a religious festival. Oh, dear, have I said that? I have. And I'll tell you the first people that I don't send Christmas cards either, which is a bit of a miserable thing. But the first person that I always get a Christmas card from is my local Indian restaurant. So Christmas doesn't upset them. And I think most of the people who work, not all, but most of the people in the restaurant are probably Muslims. So why would it upset anyone? So Dave Hipperson says there's always a shortage of starring roles. But does it not seem a trend that those that always get them are the friends of teachers, governors, kids and alike? I tell you, oh dear, it's getting out of hand. Life is getting out of hand, isn't it? Yeah, Kerry Swan says, Elvis is a nativity. That's so funny. Merry Christmas. Thank you, Kerry. Arthur says, if it's no longer classed as a Christian country, why bother with Christmas? Yeah, well, Arthur, I always just celebrate the end of one year and the beginning of another year. Seems to do it for me. I don't know about anybody else. So anyway, that's what I think about. And listen, I like the celebrations. I like the fact people have a holiday. I like the fact they get sort of all decorations up and people give each other presents and stuff. I love it. I love it. I just don't buy in to the religious bit because I don't have a faith in something that I can't see. Doesn't make me or other people like me a bad person. I don't object to other people having faiths at all. Of course I don't. I do object to people who don't like the fact I don't believe what they believe, and that makes them think I am inferior to them. I do find that quite annoying. And all this kind of paying lip service at the end of the year to something that you don't really believe in. But there we are, you know. It's like Father Christmas. We bring children up to believe, young children, we tell them Father Christmas is real. And then at a certain stage in their lives, we have to say, hang on, actually, there is no Father Christmas. It was just your mum and dad pretending.
You can't say that.
What?
You can't say it's your mum and dad pretending.
Why not?
There might be kids listening.
I never, ever, ever said to my children did have, we did do Christmas for children. We did, of course, we did, as my parents did for me and you will do for your. But I never said, you know, this is really serious. I mean, Father Christmas, we used to sort of bit of a wink and a, you know, if you're not good, Father Christmas may not call at this house. Why? Well, you know, he might if you're a bad, you know. Oh, yeah. So Father Christmas, now let me get this right. Father Christmas, how many, 60 million people in this country? Obviously, if you're sort of under five or so, I suppose you're not going to think like that. So it's fine. But then children of that age are not going to be listening to somebody like me on the radio. So they're not going to be getting upset. But it slightly annoys me that people think it's perfectly all right to lie to children and get really upset. I had some real complaint the other day when I said on another show I was doing, I said, well, come on, you know, look, you're not telling me you believe Father Christmas. You can't say Father Christmas isn't real. It'll upset the kids. Oh, get over yourself.
He is real. You can go and see him in Lapland.
Don't be so stupid, Rob. You know, and is this for some strange reason that you don't want? Why would you want to lie to your child and say, you know, there is this very magical person called Father Christmas who rides through the sky in a sleigh pulled by reindeer who can fly. And this man is so clever that he can get a present into every chimney in the world.
I know how he does it. It's all to do with time zones.
Absolutely barking mad. How do we get to this? I've no idea how we got on this. But listen, look, I quite like, I was hosting a Christmas music concert in Cambridge in one of the in a chapel in the Sydney Sussex College, famous for being the college that Oliver Cromwell attended and Carol Vorderman attended. So there we are. And that was quite fun. We didn't do any overtly religious stuff, but it was nice. I liked the atmosphere. It was good. And I didn't get struck down for being in there, so it must be okay.
Was there a Father Christmas?
No. Funnily enough, there wasn't. Oh. But there was lots of sherry.
Maybe he was wrapping all the presents. He's busy.
Yeah, you're doing it again. You're doing it again. So, look. Should cheer everybody up. Shall we have a bit of Christmas music?
Oh, go on then.
Have you got some Christmas music you could play?
We could have the Permanent Smilers.
Though?
The permanent smilers.
What, with my mojos rocking around the Christmas tree?
Yeah, I've not heard that one before. That sounds like a cracker.
Really? Well, the permanent smilers. My mojos rocking around the Christmas tree. Are you sure this is okay to play? We're not going to upset too many people.
I'll stop it if it gets a bit out of hand.
Let's have a listen. Here we go. Well, there we are, bit of Christmas Christmas cheer. The permanent smilers, well, it's giving me a smile. My Mojo's Rocking Around the Christmas Tree. You can download that on iTunes, I presume.
Yeah, I would imagine. iTunes, Amazon, I'm sure it's all over the net somewhere.
Yeah, as it is Christmas, of course, it's a good time for us all to try and make money out of each other. And the James Whale Radio Show has a shop on our website, jameswhaleradioshow.co.uk/.
Was that a pause for me to say shop?
Yep, that's very good. And we've got all sorts of things in there, including copies of yours truly's autobiography. And you could even, listen, if you go on the front page of our website, you can click on the Audible link. And you can see loads of advertising there, all sorts of stuff you might, if you're musically inclined. We have a musical company that's advertising with us now as well, don't we?
Musicola.
Yeah, Musicola. Musicola. You can also go and pop into your local Ford dealer, tell them I sent you, and you never know, they may do a really nice deal for you.
The James Whale edition.
Yeah.
Basically the car with everything turned off.
Yeah, yes. Well, here's a hint. Look, get into the dealers there just before the end of the month, and then they might be trying to make up their numbers, and you might get an even better deal. Now, I feel that we've done enough to make ourselves well and truly commercial anymore, and I might get slightly embarrassed. Let's have our guest on. He's a man called, an actor called John Challis. He's a great bloke. I haven't spoken to John Challis for years and years and years. You will all know John because of the character that he played in Only Fools and Horses, the character of Boycie. Now, I recorded this a little while ago, and the line is not as good as I would have wished, but he is in his dressing room in the theatre in Plymouth at the moment, where he's doing pantomime. So I apologise for that. But, you know, it's a nice chat. And at the end, we do a little sketch, which could actually, I think, Only Fools and Horses could come back with me playing the main role, don't you?
Or the replacement granddad or uncle.
What are you talking about?
You're a man of multi-talents, you.
Yeah. Let's talk to John. John Challis, I imagine, John, you get fed up to the back teeth with everybody going, Boycie!
If only they did it like that, James. Yeah, no, it's one of those things that, you know, just live with. You can't do anything about it. It happens, you know. It's the luckiest thing to have been part of that show, you know. And everybody thinks they know you. And it's the same for all of us, I think. You know, so it's just something you have to embrace it, I think.
Everybody thinks there should be another Only Fools and Horses. Is it ever likely to happen?
Well, I wish it would, but unfortunately we haven't got anyone to write it, you know, because only one man ever wrote the show, John Sullivan, and unfortunately he passed away three years ago. And so I guess, you know, it would be sort of less than it used to be if somebody else wrote it. And I don't think anybody wants that, really. So I think it's pretty unlikely.
I think that the interesting thing, John, is that show is still on somewhere on the wide world of TV.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's on gold. I mean, almost every day, I think. And I think there's one, they're showing a special on Christmas Day, I think, 11 o'clock in the morning this year. I'm not sure which one that is, but it is extraordinary. And people sort of get in touch on Twitter and say they've just seen a particular episode or a particular show somewhere. You know, like I said, because it's shown abroad quite a lot as well, you know, in what are called attract audiences. You know, it sounds a bit dodgy, all that, but in fact they're on aeroplanes and sort of the armed forces or all over the world and so on. So yes, it's shown everywhere. Sometimes with subtitles and sometimes sort of dubbed into another language. It's quite extraordinary the appeal of it all.
Are you still on repeats or not?
Yeah, it's about four and take me a time. So we're not going to get very rich, I don't think. But if it comes out on terrestrial television, you know, we do okay. But on the cable channels, you know, Gold and so on, and Dave, I think it comes out on Dave and so on. It's not what you'd call very lucrative, but there is a lot of it. So it adds up to about sort of £1.50 every month or something like that, I suppose.
Listen, John, let's leave Boycie for the time being and move on to what you're doing now. You're in pantomime at the moment. Where are you in pantomime?
Well, I'm down in Plymouth, in Devon, doing Theatre Royal Plymouth. And we just started rehearsing and we open on December the 19th, which is completely terrifying, actually looking at the date as it is at the moment. But it's coming together, and we're having a lot of laughs, I have to say. The wonderful Bobby Devereaux is playing Simple Simon, so you can imagine what that's like. So there's lots of ideas and lots of laughter going on. And we've got Chico playing the hero, Jack. There's somebody I hadn't worked with before. I worked with Bobby before and actually survived, which was really good. But Chico, I hadn't met before. What a great guy he is, though. He's very funny and sends himself out really nicely. And of course, his wonderful song will be part of the show. And And we're all having a pretty good time, too. We've got Jeffrey Holland, too, who's well known to television people, Heidi High and all that.
Yep.
And I worked with Jeffrey before a lot. So it's like a sort of big family having a good time mucking around, really. The director desperately trying to keep some order. It's going ever so well.
And what part are you playing?
I'm the children frightener. I don't know why I've done pantomime for about the last 23 years, and I always saw myself as a sort of romantic light comedian, you know. But people don't see me that way. They just see me as this horrible person who goes around threatening children, you know. But I have to provide the evil influence, and of course I get my comeuppance at the end. But it's quite funny. Flesh Creep, his name is, in Jack and the Beanstalk.
Well, listen, every time I've ever done pantomime, I feel like you. I see myself as a sort of James Bond lead type figure, yeah. But all I get is to play the baddies, Abenaza, and, you know, the anything else that's supposed to be nasty.
It's very lonely this time of year, James, isn't it? Because everybody hates you, you know, and everybody else gets loved and cheered and clapped, and you're the only one sort of left feeling awful, you know. I mean, so I had to get through this every year of my life, you know.
I know. You sit in your own dressing room at the end of the show whilst everybody comes round and visits all the nice people you're left.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to talk to you.
No, I know. No, it's awful, really. It's supposed to be good time of goodwill to all men, and I don't get a lot of goodwill. I don't know about you.
Well, but listen, if you know Bobby well, he will give you no quarter. He'll consider you're a proper actor, you see, and spend most of his time trying to corpse you.
Yeah, he's got a horrible little twinkly face, hasn't he, which is, he keeps changing what he's going to say. He's never quite sure where he's coming from, you know. But it is great fun, I have to say.
Now, listen, you've done some movies as well, John, haven't you? You branched out some years ago. You did a couple of movies.
Yes, I did. I did something called The Titchborne Claimant, that was what it was called. And it was about a man who pretended to be an aristocrat. He came back from Australia to claim a big inheritance. And it was a famous sort of Victorian story. And eventually he got found out. But he nearly sort of conned everybody and got them to part with the money. But he didn't quite do it. So that was great. And lots of big names there. Stephen Fry was in it. And even Sir John Gielgud you know, there was one of the last things he ever did, I think. So it was a terrific cast. It was great to be part of that. And I've recently done a little short film called Tea for Two, which is a little ghost story, a little short film about a quarter of an hour long, which is going into festivals abroad and Cannes Film Festival and all that, which we've got great hopes for. I've done a few bits on the film, but mainly been on the stage and television, really.
Have you never fancied, we were on the programme last week, we had James Cosmo. I don't know if you're familiar with Cosmo.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
And, of course, James went to Hollywood and did very well. Have you never fancied that?
Oh, yes, I have. I'm just waiting for someone to ask me, really. James, I see at some sort of conventions, you know, signing conventions, and he turns up there because he's been in practically everything, hasn't he? And there's a fantastic character, and so we sort of have a conversation about it, you know. But I sort of flirted with all that. I was out actually in America doing a couple of plays some years ago, and people said lots of complimentary things about it, but things didn't quite work out, I kept getting called back to this country, you know, to do bits of television. And actually, one of the things I got called back to do was a show called Citizen Smith, which was John Sullivan's first series, you know, starring Robert Lindsay. And from that, he liked what I did with the character, and he said he wanted to use it again one day. The following year, Only Fools and Horses came up. But I was, as they say, I nearly stayed in America, so it was quite lucky I came back, I think. Otherwise, it would, might be something else would have happened. It's one of those sort of crossroads things. in my life. Talking of Crossroads, I've been in Crossroads as well. I've been in practically everything, you know. But I quite like that.
Well, I don't know whether you've ever played the part, but I could see you now playing Dr. Watson in Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah, people ask me what sort of, you know, are there any parts I'd like to play, and certainly Sherlock or Dr. Watson, I'd love to do. You know, mind you, I'm not sure I could do it much better than Cumberbatch and Freeman do it. You know, it's pretty good, that series, I think. You know, but that would be nice. It's very kind of you to say so. I don't know. Once again, you know, if someone asks me, I'll surely go and do it. But I'm also wanting to play Doctor Who as well, and I also wanted to play Dracula. As you can see, I'm interested in all these glamorous parts, and I actually did get to play, but only on the radio. So I got this great face for radio, but I actually played Dracula, which was a big thrill for me earlier on in the year. So, Dr. Watson, yes, it's interesting. I'll start putting that about.
Do you, I'll tell you what I meant to ask you as well, I forgot. In pantomime, do you play your character as Boycey?
Well, there's a sort of nod in that direction, you know, because I was talking to Bobby Davro about it, and he's a big fan of the show too, and he's a great believer in the fact that, you know, a lot of people come to the show because of what they know people have been doing, you know. So people have become assuming because I've been in Fools and Horses. So you've got to give them a little bit of it, you know. So we're trying to sort of find some elegant ways of putting the character in there. But he will certainly make an appearance, two or three appearances, practically. There'll be lots of references to the show, you know. So every time I do it, sometimes the good fairy changes me into a good person, and that good person turns out to be Boycey, you know. So it's nice, nice little transformation scene at the end, you know. And people have been sitting there sort of waiting for it a bit, and when it happens, they really enjoy that moment.
Have you? I mean, when you started out as an actor, did you think you'd still be doing it so many years on?
No, I didn't really think about it. I never had any plan, you know. I it was quite likely that I would have gone off and done something else, really, because it happens to me quite often, and it has happened to me in my life. And I think, oh, I want to do something else now. I was like that at school. I always wanted to get out of a lesson halfway through and do something else, you know, and all go and play football or something or other. A bit of a butterfly mind, I suppose. So I suppose I always thought I might find something else to do. You know, I did a bit of gardening in the garden centre at one point because I thought that's the way I wanted to go. And then I thought I'd go to Spain and I'd grow some herbs and teach people to speak English. But I always went back to it, you know. I mean, it was usually at a time when not much was happening. You know, it happens to every performer, I suppose. You know, you just have those gaps where nobody seems particularly interested, really. And so you think, oh, well, I'll go and do something else. And then, of course, Sod's Law dictates that as soon as you do that, the phone rings and somebody asks you to come and do something. And that's happened to me two or three times. And of course, I've gone back and done it and thought, oh, yeah, I love doing what I do. You know, but it's like you don't want to get sort of dominated by it, you know. A lot of people get sort of quite knotted up about it, the whole thing, because you have to deal with rejection all your life, you know, really. Mm. And if somebody you can do it better, or they prefer somebody else's face or something.
I went for a job one time not long ago, actually, and they wanted someone to do a radio show. And I went for this, I went for a chat, and they said, look, we'd love you to do this, but we're just going to see if we can find a woman who could do it better than you.
Oh. I can be a woman, you said. I can do women.
I said, if you tell me now you're going to look for somebody younger, I think I've got a good case for sexual and age discrimination.
Yes, quite. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the sort of thing. I mean, I did about seven tests for a big voiceover campaign. some years ago, and I went back no less than 7 times to do changes in scripts and so on and so on. And I thought, God, well, it's worth going back this many times because it's going to be a really big campaign, you know, and I should make some decent money. And eventually it stopped, and they got a woman to do it instead. which was lovely for her, but I did, at what stage they decided, you know, that it had to be, I don't know, it's so strange. And I mean, but again, it's like something, that sort of thing happens, you go and you throw your hands up and you go, oh, for hell with this. And I mean, I suppose in a lot of ways that's why I started writing. I'd always written stuff down, you know, and I started writing the autobiography, and so that became a part of my life, you know, as well. So, but I sort of like that. I've always liked the idea that you do lots of different things. That's why I like playing characters in plays and so on. In Rec in the early days, the great thrill for me was to be a different person every week, you know, and I found that absolutely fascinating. And now I'm sort of a bit saddled with one particular character that got very famous on the telly, you know, but it's great sort of trying to create something else, even in the pantomime here with Flesh Creep, you know, because that's what always interested me, you know. So you translate that into your life and you think, well, it's not just about being an actor. I'd like to direct something or write something or, you know, all that.
I know. It's always a funny thing when, you know, I don't take this the wrong way, John, but you have never been really a big star, but you've always worked, or it seems that you've always worked through your life, doesn't it? And there are lots and lots of actors who are lucky enough to be continually working, but are never, if you like, the flavour of the moment.
No, that's right, yeah. I think the die was cast quite early, because I remember being quite upset very early on, you know, when I started almost, and the casting director had said to my agents, so I was doing lots of bits of telly, and I'd been the Royal Shakespeare Company and in the West End and so on, done lots of rep, and he said to my agent, he said, John's great, he said, he'll never be a superstar, but he's really useful. Settled me with being used, but in a way it was a terrific compliment, you know, because I could do lots and lots of different things, and as he said, you know, the thing about casting is if you can fill the whole cast with some, you know, good people, even playing the smaller parts, you get a much better production, you know, it's a part of a whole, you know. So were you ever really useful, James, do you think?
No. And do you know, I've always been second choice. They've always tried to find somebody better than me, but in the end, they had to come back. And
there was no one better than you, that's why.
And they're always saying, oh, no, not him again. Listen, we get somebody else. And I was talking to Tony Blackburn the other day, and I said to him, come on, Tony, why are you still doing this? He said, well, what else am I going to do? I said, but why haven't you become, I don't know, a director of programs or whatever? He said, well, why haven't you? I said, well, I asked you first, you know. He said, because I like being on the radio. And it's funny, that's what I do. I just talk nonsense for a living.
But very entertainingly. You're there to entertain people, you know, like I am, you know.
Well, listen, let's talk about this new venture of yours, your new talk show. Tell me that.
Oh, yeah. So this really came, this is another sort of departure, really, because I met somebody who worked cruise ships, you know, the big P&O cruisers, and he said, well, a lot of people come along, you know, and they do little talks and so on. And it's great because you get a free cruise. You can bring your partner along, and you get a nice outside cabin. You see bits of the world, and all you've got to do is do a couple of talks, you know, for 3/4 of an hour. And, you know, you can cruise around, you know, for 10 days and so on. And I went, what can I talk about, you know? And then I suddenly thought, well, you know, Ernie Coulson, people were fascinated by it. People come up to me every day and want to talk about it. So why don't I talk about that? So I stitched something together. And with some trepidation, As you can imagine, because I'm used to going out there pretending to be other people. But this was me. This was me on my own, you know, a bit like a sort of stand-up or something. These people that I admire tremendously, I think they're the bravest people in the world. And I went out and I talked and I told stories. And I found that the stories I could tell, you know, not just about Only Fools, but also my life, you know, what had happened to me along the way. People enjoyed it. And I found I could, I went on far too long, and I went on for about an hour, you know, but it seemed to go down very well. And then I got asked to do another one. Then could I do a third show? Because so many people wanted to see it. And I thought, wow, this is good. And also I was on these cruises seeing parts of the world I'd never seen before. So it's a terrific deal. And I did, I suppose it was six or seven of those cruises. And eventually I thought, well, why don't I sort of extend it a bit, try and extend it a bit, put a Q&A on it, and try and do it on land, you know, in little theatres. And I found that a couple of people were interested in that. And yeah, there was a few teething problems. I got it slightly wrong, and I went off and I found the wrong person who then didn't give me any money to do it, owed me money, still owes me money, in fact, so... So that was a bit of a knockback, but eventually I sorted it out, and I suppose if I could stay enough, I found out what works best and you know, and what doesn't, and sort of you hone the stories and so on. And now I do, yes, I've done lots of shows, and I've got 23 dates starting in Croydon on January the 23rd, so not long after this pantomime finishes.
You need to take copies of your autobiography and sell those in the interval.
Ah, well, funny you should mention that, James, but that is what I do. Anybody who is coming to see these shows, my books, my two copies, two parts of my autobiography and two novels I've written too, called Reggie Staggart Bay, Reggie in the Frame, will be on sale after the show, and it's ideal Christmas presents, these. And they're pretty cheap. And you should buy 10 to get them even cheaper. No, they're terrific presents for people, stocking fillers, you know, and I can obviously dedicate the books for people, you know, and put whatever they want in there, as long as it's complimentary and not too rude.
Are you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter, yes, at Being Boise. Being Boise is the name of the first part of my autobiography, so the Twitter site is at Being Boise, so... Yeah, join me on Twitter. We've got lots of people and lots of stuff happens on Twitter, so that's quite an interesting place to be as well. But the website is the place if you want a dedicated book, wigmorebooks.com.
Okay. Well, you follow me on Twitter at TheJamesWhale, and I'll follow you on Twitter at BeingBoise.
Yeah, I certainly will. That'll be great. I'll follow you if you follow me. There you are.
Right, just before we finish this, John, just give us a bit of Boise. I don't care what you do, but just for all those fans of Only Fools and Horses.
Yeah. All right, James. Well, it's a bit difficult to know what to say to you, but get your coat. We're leaving. How's that? Is that any good?
Yeah. Can I play the other part? Hang on, let's see if I can. What do you mean we're leaving? I've only just got here. I'm having fun.
For God's sake, pull yourself together. Life isn't supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be hard work. I mean, I've got to go back to rehearsal at 2 o'clock, and I haven't had any lunch, James.
John, listen, you're working pretty hard at the moment. Take it easy and look forward to meeting up in the new year sometime. That'd be good.
That'd be great, James. Thanks a lot. Great to talk to you.
Say hi to Bobby.
Sure will. And have a great Christmas, huh?
And you, my friend. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Cheers, James. Bye.
Would you like a free audiobook? Our friends at Audible are giving everybody a free audiobook just by going to the James Whale Radio Show website, jameswhaleradio.co.uk. All you need to do is click on the Audible link, register, and you'll get your free audiobook. It's a bit like a book club. And remember, you can leave at any time and you still get to keep your free audiobook. So what are you waiting for? Just head over to the James Whale Radio Show website, jameswhaleradio.co.uk, and click on that Audible link now.
There we are, John Challis. And if you're in Plymouth, why don't you pop along and see him in pantomime? I think that'd be quite funny. He's playing the character of Flesh Creep. I'd like to play that next year. Now, should we do Tech Talk? Because my very good friend and big fan of the program who listens on his way home and to his radio program at the BBC, Tony Fisher, loves Tech Talk. He's a big fan of Tech Talk.
I forgot about Tech Talk. I have got something, but I forgot we were doing it. Okay.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm hoping that we'll get a nice juicy sponsor in the new year for Tech Talk. I think that's exactly the sort of item we should have on this program, where we can get a sponsor.
Okay, well, this week's Tech Talk, because it's Christmas and people are buying lots of gifts, I thought I'd remind people and tell people about vouchers and discounts.
Vouchers?
Yeah. On the internet, when you do your internet shopping, when you're just about to pay for your item, there's always a little box that says promotional code.
Right.
And you put a code in there and you can get like 10, 15, sometimes 50% off. The other day I bought some things and I got 60 quid off with putting a code in. And the way you get these codes is you just do a quick Google search for the name of the company and the word promotional code, and it will take you to a website which will list all the codes that other members of the public have been given in the post, and they've published them. So by putting those codes in, and you try them, and some work, some don't, you just keep going until you get one, and then you'll find that your bills will come down at Christmas.
Is that legal?
Of course it is. Because most of the codes are published in magazines and whatever. They're put out in the public, but you just don't get to see them.
Ah, right. And so they just want to see how prepared you are to read about what they're doing. And if you really read it and you get the code and you use it, then they know that their advertising has not been in vain.
Exactly. They've given the code out for a reason.
What did you get 60 quid off? My present, was it?
I can't say, because it's a gift for somebody.
Yeah, for me?
I can't say.
Is it for me?
I can't say.
Come on. Come on. Is it for me? Come on, come on, come on. You know I like surprises, but come on. Is it for me?
I can't say.
Oh, God, okay. Right, I wanted to talk about... I wanted to talk about breastfeeding, actually. Did you see that there was a... There was a demonstration of breastfeeding mothers outside Claridge's Hotel last week. I wish I'd been there. And I always find people who get upset by this, the same sort of miserable, miserable people. You know, a mum's got to feed her baby whenever a mum's got to feed her baby. And it's only women. Generally, it's women who get upset about it, not men. Men, you know, unless you're a complete screaming pervert, men usually just look the other way or try not to take any notice, and the mum gets on with what she has to. But women, no. Oh, no. Oh, that's disgusting. She shouldn't be doing that here. Why can't they go and do it in the toilet? Well, I suggest anybody who's offended by a mother breastfeeding goes and eats their food in the toilet if they don't like it. Goodness sake. When are we going to get a little more give and take in life? I'm getting fed up with it. My thoughts about that. Now, and the other thing, Baroness Jenkins said, poor people can't cook. And I put this out on Facebook and I said, what do you think about poor people not being able to cook? And we got lots of response. This is some of it. Sonia says, don't these people think before they come out with election losing comments? Well, Sonia, I don't know whether she meant it in the way it came out or whatever, but hasn't she got a point? A lot of people, poor or not, can't bloody cook. I mean, you know, you go into a supermarket now and you see readily grated cheese. Why would you buy cheese that was grated? Surely everybody can grate cheese. You know, you go in and you see all these ready meals, which are far more expensive. People tell you, oh, I can't afford to buy. You know, food tends to be fairly cheap. Most people could afford to make a bowl of porridge in the morning. You know, one cup of water, one cup of oats, one cup of milk, stick it in a pan, cook it up. Lovely. So I don't think it's a question of poor people can't cook. I think it's a question of lots of lazy so-and-sos can't cook and moan about the fact everything's too expensive. Brendan Phipps says, probably right, I've got about 70p in my pocket and I can't even boil toast. Well, no, you probably can't, Brendan, but then I wouldn't worry too much, mate. Carlos says, that woman's a total prat. She probably had a nanny, a cook, and a bottle washer. Well, yeah, she might be, and she probably did. But what's that got to do with you and me? What has that got to do with you and me? You know, there are people out there who can't manage and need to be helped. We don't teach our children how to cook anymore. Loads of parents now give their kids finger food. They sit in front of the television. They go to fast food shops. But, you know, there are a significant amount of people who behave in this way. They feed their children the wrong food. And the food that they feed their children costs far more than actually if they were to bother to put some time in and cook the food themselves. I think this is quite annoying. James Watson says, poor people, not through their choice, often find it easier and cheaper to give their kids 99p burgers from McDonald's. I don't agree with that. I think that you could probably spend the 99p in a better way. But you do have a point. There are some very cheap alternatives to food. But people don't seem to know how to do it these days. Annie Humphrey says, this woman makes me feel sick looking at her. Why? You know, there's a lot of people who suddenly get really upset with this woman who she might be born with a silver spoon in her mouth. I don't know the woman. She might have had a real easy ride. But don't you think we should have a little think of it? Do you think there are people who may not actually be that poor, but who are not able to cope with life? People who perhaps earn... There'll be people who are a lot poorer than the one she's talking about who manage okay. And I just worry about a section, perhaps, of our society now that feel they're owed everything. That they feel that, you know, they shouldn't have to do anything, that everything should be supplied for them. And then if it's not, they moan like mad. And it annoys me intensely, to be honest. Samantha says, rich people can't cook, they have butler. You see, there's so much of this. If you're not a wealthy person with a butler, then you should be aspiring to be one. I mean, look, hang on just a minute. Rob?
Yeah?
Bring me a cup of tea, would you? And one of those rather nice chocolate biscuits as well.
The ones in the special tin?
In the special tin.
Okay.
Please.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you.
I'm just going to unplug myself. Hang on a sec.
Got it?
Yeah, hang on.
Thank you.
You've gone quiet.
No, I'm waiting for it in the china, not in that plastic mug. Proper china. There we are. Thank you. Okay, that's all right. That's it. Thank you very much. No, I want it black. I don't want it with milk in it. Don't be ridiculous. Where the chocolate and the chocolate biscuit go? Right, fine. After we've done the show, by the way, do you think you could clear the garage out? It's looking a little messy.
Are you getting a bigger car?
I don't know. I mean, this one's big enough for me, really. I could sleep in it. But I thought there's not enough for you to do to warrant me having a butler like you.
Oh, okay.
Butler, stroke, producer, whatever you are. So if you could just do that, that would be very good. Thank you.
No problem.
Good. Now, what are you doing now?
I'm reading the paper for you.
Good. Elizabeth said, I'm poor. I cook porridge for my breakfast every day. Which is a good point. Lots of people getting very irate about the poor old Baroness Jenkin. But, you know, there are a lot of people, perhaps she worded it the wrong way, a lot of people who can't cook. I find it surprising, considering the nation seems to be obsessed with celebrity chefs. But there we are. I've got that out of my system. Don't forget, if you want to make your point, you can get in touch. You can email me at jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. A big shout out for those of you listening sur le continent. And that was an old Jimmy Young saying, wasn't it?
We've got the guys from the United Arab Emirates back again.
Have we? Who are these people who are listening like mad in the United Arab Emirates, I wonder?
I don't know, but can they change the name of their area they live in, because it's really hard to say.
Well, what is it? Where do they live?
United Arab Emirates.
Oh, the United Arab Emirates. No, I don't think they can really change the name of that. You'll start a war. Don't be silly. Right, I think it's time for any question part of the programme. Your thoughts, questions of the week. Shall we start?
Okay. Eric wants to know why there's not enough Whaley on the radio.
I think there's more than enough. 60-odd hours, honestly, and appearing in various other radio stations around the country. Just go online, you can find out. I think, he's being sarcastic, obviously.
Well, maybe not.
You know, Sky TV every now and then on a Sunday morning. Follow me on Twitter and find out where I am, at the James Whale.
There we go.
Good.
Paul, would you rather be a lion or a tiger?
I think I'd rather be a tiger.
Yeah, I think so.
I like the clothes better. Okay.
John Barker, they should ban salespeople, Jehovah's Witness and party canvassers from knocking on people's doors and invading their privacy.
Yeah, John, I'm with you. I get really annoyed when people, not only that, when people call, all this cold calling, which I've been moaning about for months now. You get phone calls now every day. I get a phone call. It's a recording message. I'm sat there like a pillock and say, yeah, hello. Yeah, hello. Have you claimed on your PFI or whatever it is? Just annoying. And yeah, knocking on the doors. Well, I tell you what I do. Mrs. W and I, if you want to come round, by the way, good, Rob, for you to know this. If you're calling round, ring me and tell me you're coming, because if I don't know you're coming, the door won't get answered.
Is that why I've been standing outside in the cold all these weeks?
Probably. Nice cup of tea, by the way.
You're welcome.
So that's what I suggest, and people soon get bored with it. I did once. I had a Jehovah's Witnesses. They were getting really annoying and coming round regularly. You know, it's funny. Nobody minds you being rude about Jehovah's Witnesses, and I find that a little annoying, a little upsetting, because they have as much right as everybody else. They're religious people. They have this belief, this faith. Their belief, their faith, is no less likely than any of the other people. Yet apparently it's okay to be rude to Jehovah's Witnesses. Now, how does that work?
I don't know.
Anyway, I just had a shower, came out of the shower, and these people were standing, you know, three or four of them outside the door. I thought, I know how to actually make sure they never come back again, because they'll tell each other about it. I just opened the door completely naked. A frightening sight for everyone, and they've never been back since.
Top tip there for all the listeners.
A top what? Oh, top tip, yeah. Right, go on.
Andy, Father Christmas, why does he never eat the whole mince pie?
Well, because he doesn't exist, actually, Andy. I hate to leave this with you. And some people, parents, think it makes it look a little more realistic if they take a bite out of the pie and then they can pretend to the children, oh, look, strange man has broken into our home, slid down our chimney and taken a bite out of the mince pie.
David says, how can I ever complain about you?
Quite right. Next.
I've got no more questions.
You haven't got any more questions? Well, if you want to ask a question, don't forget, jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. Right, that's it. Listen, we'll see you same time next week. Thank you very much indeed. Get in touch. Follow us on Twitter at TheJamesWhale. Tell your friends to tune in. Anyway, listen, I'm going to have a lie down. Rob?
Yes?
Turn down my bed, if you don't mind.
Would you like me to get in it and warm it up for you first?
Oh, well, if you're offering.
To the James Whale Radio Show. For more information, visit www.jameswhaleradio.co.uk. Why not check us out on facebook.com/JamesWhaleRadioShow or follow James on Twitter @TheJamesWhale. James Whale, the voice of reason.